Introducing a potted naval history of mostly Europe, 500 BC to 1950. We're starting in 500 BC because going earlier than that requires interpretations of rock carvings and papyrus, and I'm in no way qualified to interpret the sacred texts. Anyway, we start our story with everyone sailing about in relatively small ships. The more advanced nations would try and ram you to poke holes in your ship, others would try and make it a land war at sea by boarding you. In general, though, most naval activity consisted of moving troops from place to place, helped by the fact that most ships could be easily beached or in some cases carried over land. Occasionally, someone might shoot arrows or hurl slingstones at you. Then someone realised this whole shooting thing was quite fun and would build ever-increasing sizes of throwing engines to hurl everything but the kitchen sink at the enemy, largely because kitchen sinks hadn't been invented yet and large metal or pottery bowls were expensive. Ramming and boarding was still useful, but the Romans decided that allowing people to shoot all their shiny legionaries with small trees was unfair and decided to bring things back to basics with harpoons and a boarding bridge called a corvus so they could get on with the stabbing after they got bored of the shooting. This happy state of affairs would continue for several hundred years as ships got larger and larger until they became impractical, and smaller versions had to be developed to be able to move anywhere fast. More on that later. Then the Roman Empire fell apart, and along with the complex industry to keep these kinds of navies going. So it was back to ramming, boarding, and portable missile weapons for a bit, except for the Byzantines, who misinterpreted a slogan designed to encourage friendliness, and under the new banner of Reach Out and Torch, someone invented the first ship-mounted flamethrower using Greek fire, a substance that refused to be put out by almost anything. This helped reinforce their territorial distancing policy for a good long while, as humans generally find temperatures of several hundred degrees uncomfortable. Over in the more northerly regions, a group of angry Scandinavians invented the world's first flat-pack navy, and then, driven to an insensible rage by the leftover parts and unclear instructions, decided to go out and pillage and burn everyone nearby. They became known as Vikings, and took their dragon ships all over the place in an effort to meet new people, kill them, and nick all their stuff. On the way, they discovered a relatively green land and named it Iceland, a really icy land and named it Greenland, and also America, which they called Vinland, before the locals stabbed them for a change, and so the Vikings went back to raiding easier targets like monasteries and France. However, despite their travels and seamanship, sea battles were still largely a mass of ships where everyone ran around stabbing and shooting each other, just like they did on land. Back down in the Mediterranean, the triremes of old had evolved into the galley, but everyone was still pretty much charging around ramming and boarding each other with the odd siege engine thrown in. This was a high-risk activity as most galleys were fast, but something of a glass cannon, as would be proved in short order with the deployment of bronze cannon. With the demise of the Viking raiders, ships in the northern European waters decided the best approach to combat was to pretend to be castles and fight small sieges, except with a much higher risk of drowning. Over on the other side of the planet, the Chinese would develop vast fleets of ships that would go largely unrecorded outside of their own histories, although this was in part because they managed to build some truly colossal treasure ships, send them all over the place on trade and exploration missions under Admiral Zhang He, then decide that everyone they found was silly barbarians that offered nothing to the Middle Kingdom, and then get rid of all their fleet and most of their treasure ships, having concluded it was pointless to maintain an oceanic navy, a decision that they would come to regret some centuries later. Various crusades and such brought northern European ships into the Mediterranean, where the lack of oars meant the Mediterranean galleys would run rings around the cogs and hulks, whilst the sheer scale and height of the latter meant boarding was almost impossible and ramming had very little effect, so the two sides would normally drift past each other, exchanging curses and arrows. Then a solution to the centuries-long problem of hitting somebody a very long way away at sea was solved with the widespread deployment of cannon. Initially supposed to soften up an enemy, or in a lucky case, one-hit a galley, this led to ships growing larger and stronger, with galleons covered in guns, soldiers, and wooden castles, and ships got larger and larger until they became impractical, and so smaller versions of them had to be developed to be able to move and fight anywhere fast. Remember that problem from before? These race-built galleons developed into so-called great ships and frigates, which eventually adopted the line of battle and thus became ships of the line. Naval prominence in this period was held by the Portuguese, then the Spanish, then the English, then the Dutch, occasionally and briefly by the French, and then by the English again as everyone tried to steal everybody else's merchant ships, treasure ships, trading outposts, colonies, navies, and other valuables. The Dutch were very good at this. In another relatively unknown side note, the Russians and the Swedes knocked seven bells out of each other in the Baltic, using everything from galleys to ships of the line to full-on amphibious landings. Then most of the lessons were promptly ignored by everyone else, and then mostly lost to the original participants when both sides ran out of puff. The English briefly seemed to have some form of ascendancy before the biggest collection of colonies they had decided they didn't like tea, taxes, treaties, or pretty much anything else that started with the letter T, and rebelled. Everyone else promptly decided it was a good time to give the now British a good kicking, and so Britain fought most of the rest of the naval world, except for Portugal, and came out of the whole experience decidedly worse for wear. Helpfully, though, the French then executed their king and killed most of their competent naval officers for the crime of being nobility before declaring war on everyone themselves. On land, this worked out pretty well for them for a while. At sea, not so much. With various fleets and nations in confused disarray, the British took the chance to regroup, give the Dutch a quick kick, steal the Danish fleet, scare the Russians, send Captain Cochrane after the Spanish, and rename the Marine Nationale to the Royal Navy Overseas Fleet Reserve, absorbing large numbers of freshly built French warships into their own fleet, and then beating up the remaining French ships with them and a few of others that they'd made earlier themselves. Navally, this culminated in the Battle of Trafalgar, where Admiral Nelson led his fleet to a crushing victory, but managed to get himself shot in the process. He was already short an eye and an arm, so most of the remaining target locations were pretty vital to his continued existence. Britain promptly celebrated the life of their most significant admiral to date by building him a memorial column in the middle of London, miles away from the sea, where he could be mobbed by pigeons. They also decided to keep his flagship around for bragging rights. There would also be another small conflict with previous British-owned colonies that were now calling themselves the United States. This didn't go particularly well to start with, thanks to some rather nice frigates the Americans owned, until the British sent a couple of dozen capital ships to scare everyone back into port. The Americans decided that they too would keep an important ship around for bragging rights, choosing the frigate with the best kill-to-death ratio. In theory, everyone should now have been singing Rule Britannia and the sea should have been peaceful. But not so much, because whilst a major global conflict was avoided for the next century, almost everybody else decided to take pot shots at each other whilst building ships larger and larger until they became impractical. But this time they invented a new way of building them so they could keep going even larger. Significant chunks of the Spanish Empire broke away and formed their own countries, then immediately set about fighting each other. The Russians fought the Ottomans several times and won, up until it looked like they might be winning a bit too much, and the left-field combination of Britain and France decided to hold the Crimean War before promptly sending most of their heavy ships to the Baltic, which was exactly where the Crimea wasn't. This saw the first use of iron armour used to protect ships, which was promptly overshadowed by the Americans decided they were going to fight each other, and rapidly building up a huge fleet of ironclad monitors to patrol and secure every drop of water in and around the USA that was less than 20 foot deep. And then a huge race ensued between various big European countries to build ironclads and secure every drop of water on the rest of the planet. In the middle of this race, an Austrian admiral showed up with an old wooden warship and sank a couple of Italian ironclads just to confuse everyone and send them reaching for old books on ramming for a while. Iron turned into steel, and everyone started building ships of all classes larger and larger until they became impractical, so smaller versions had to be developed to be able to move and fight anywhere fast. It's like they never learn. America then sent a ship to Cuba, where it blew itself up, the press blamed the Spanish, and the pain and shell rain fell mainly on the ships of Spain for a bit. Japan then decided to declare war on Russia, sank one fleet, and then waited for the next one to show up. It turned out that lots of paint, coal dust, snakes, thrown binoculars, and prophets of doom were not in fact the suitable resources with which to fight a modern naval war, and the Russians lost again. Someone now realised that having a lot of big guns would be nice, but then Admiral Fisher elbowed him out the way, took all of his plans, and in the manner of an early 20th century Jeremy Clarkson yelled, "Power!" and built the dreadnought, setting everyone back to square one for the second time within 50 years. France discovered artisan battleships were not that quick to build and lost her number 2 spot for the first time in half a millennium to Germany, then lost the number 3 spot to the USA, who decided they wanted in on a bit of this action. Then someone got shot in the Balkans and everyone went to war with everyone else except the USA, who decided to make a load of money off of it until Germany offered to help Mexico take back the Alamo, at which point the USA came steaming over to dare the Germans to say that again. The last few decades of massive naval spending culminated in the biggest battleship fight of all time at Jutland, but since Beatty couldn't communicate and Scheer didn't want to commit suicide, there was a lot of running around, some very inconvenient exploding, and then everyone went back home in pretty much the same situation they'd been in before, only with slightly fewer ships. The war ended and those left standing restarted the naval arms race, decided it was too expensive, agreed to a set of rules to follow instead, then promptly began working out ways to get around the rules. They also began to think these new flying things might be useful, so they put landing strips on some of their ships to help with that. After a couple of new sets of rules to try and close the loopholes in the previous sets of rules, a bunch of countries skipped out on the rules entirely, and so everyone started building ships of all classes larger and larger, and you can see where this is going. But at the end of the 1930s, it was time for round two, and everyone went to war with everyone else again. Plenty more ships exploded or were otherwise sunk, and those floating airfield things came back to ruin a lot of people's dreams about Jutland too, now with swastikas. Britain fought everyone on their naughty list at once, and Japan managed to sink a good chunk of the US Pacific fleet at Pearl Harbor. U-boats were everywhere, but then American industry said, "This isn't even my final form," and began to copy-paste ships all over the place. The war ended with America in a clear first place, Britain second, and everyone else wondering where all their ships had gone. Then it turned out war was expensive and most of everyone's fleets got scrapped or sold off just in time for a new and confusing age of nuclear power, missiles and communists to appear. And then everyone else started building their ships larger and larger again.
That's it for this video. Thanks for watching. If you have a comment or suggestion for a ship to review, let us know in the comments below. Don't forget to comment on the pinned post for dry dock questions.